Down to the wire photo finish, election 2018. We are less than a month away from election day, which is November 6th, 2018 for the midterms. And I want to do a quick podcast of just off the cuff observations about where we are right now and what people are saying and what are the takeaways. So we're going to do that in podcast 767, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Now, before we get started with this rambling, easy talker about some of the key things, just kind of takeaways for the election, I want to talk about privacy issues. If you're concerned about privacy issues, if you're concerned about your privacy, then I'm going to direct you to a banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. This is this book, Big Brother in the Exam Room. And I'm going to tell you how to get the book in a minute, but I want you to hear from the author, Twyla Braes. And, you know, Twyla is a friend of mine. She has done more to try to move health insurance, medical insurance, to be cheap and affordable and reliable for regular citizens. And when you hear what she has to say about the computers in your doctor's office and the hospital and the records they keep that you think are confidential, we think and we want them to be confidential, you're going to want this book. So here's Twyla.
Patient privacy is what patients need in order to have a sense of safety. They have to be free to have a frank discussion with their doctor, even though it's embarrassing, even though it could be demeaning, even though it's something they would never want to tell someone, but it's the only way that they're going to get the care that they need. The federal government has dismantled privacy through something called HIPAA. And a lot of people think that HIPAA protects their privacy, but HIPAA actually opened up everyone's medical records, and the federal government lists a number of 2.2 million entities that could have access to their medical records if those who have the data decide to share it. There is being built a national medical record system where all of the electronic health records that are sitting at the bedside and in the exam room will be hooked into it. And the CDC, the federal government, has said that they're going to reach into the cloud to find information buried deep. They're going to find perhaps parts of conversations, diagnoses, tests that were done. They're going to find out about relationships and indiscretions and whatever might be there in your electronic medical record is going to be available to outsiders without your consent because of HIPAA. Congress mandated use of this government-designed electronic health record that is designed to do what the government wants it to do, not what it needs to do for the patient and the doctor. I wrote the book, Big Brother in the Exam Room, The Dangerous Truth About Electronic Health Records, so that the American public would understand that what that machine is in the exam room is a surveillance tool as well as a command and control infrastructure through which every doctor's decisions are tracked and controlled.
Get Big Brother in the Exam Room now at cchfreedom.org or click on the Big Brother in the Exam Room banner at thebobdavispodcast.com. You'll be hearing from Twyla again in the podcasts. I'll certainly do an interview here sometime in November or December, so stay plugged in for that. Well, I don't think you can say this enough, that there isn't enough nonpartisan analysis. Now, I'm going to clarify this because I've certainly been a partisan, and I certainly have ideas about what I think, although more and more, I don't have any ideas about what I think about what should be done because I am loath to tell people what I think should be done. Why? Part of the reason is I think people are all too willing to pick a hero who tells them what they want to hear and tout that person, share that person, promote that person, talk about how much that person knows about this, that, or the other thing. And I find that to be a problem because as citizens, we're not reaching down and asking ourselves what we think should be done because we're too busy quoting, sharing, telling people about what so-and-so said. And there's so much of this in the media. I go back and forth where I think, well, should I mention this in another podcast? Should I talk about this in another podcast? You know, am I belaboring this point? And then I think about it. I go through my normal day-to-day news stuff, and I come to the conclusion that I don't think it can be said enough that almost everything is directed from a particular political point of view. So if you're on the left, you're going to say certain things and you're going to take certain things to mean certain things. And if you're on the right, then you're going to take certain things to mean certain things and you're going to say things. And you're going to promote certain points of view because you want your side to win. Sometimes it's subliminal. Sometimes it's just, you know, what you were raised with and your ideas. When it comes to commentators, though, I think it's very much directed by purpose. And I think it's a disservice to the American people, both in the media and anywhere else that it's going on where people are telling you what they think is going to happen. What I've tried to do with 9 podcasts about the so-called toss-up races and the governors and the Senate and the House is to just give you the lay of the land, which if you listen to the summary podcast is actually turning out. And that wasn't a prediction. It was just what I said was midterm races are notoriously close most of the time because most House districts are either gerrymandered, meaning that they are very safe Republican or Democrat seats, or they are competitive. And if they're competitive at all, usually they're close races. You might be surprised to find out that certain congressmen have won their seats by 200 or 300 votes or 1,000 votes or 2,000 votes. So a 47-51 margin is actually pretty wide. And what we have been told from the beginning is that either this is going to be a blue wave election, meaning that there are going to be a historic number of seats change hands, that the opposition party, which at this point is the Democrats, will take over the House and the Senate, and it'll be a sweeping change in American governance. And it's all because everyone hates the president. Okay, except when you actually went through and looked at these individual races, Senate, House, governors, you find them to be much closer, which is more in line with a standard midterm election. I've said more than once that political scientists and quote-unquote analysts don't become famous if they say things like I just said. Well, they're going to be close races because they always are, and you're not going to know till it gets down to the wire. Well, that's the truth. Midterm races are notoriously close. The competitive races are always close. Governor's races are generally close. And it will be a photo finish. It will be down to the wire photo finish, I think. At least that's my modest prediction on election night. And I don't like making predictions, but I think that's a pretty safe prediction to make. Because one of the things I noticed is that there were all kinds of predictions, and if you listen to those podcasts, all kinds of predictions about how certain candidates were going to do, and Ted Cruz was going to lose Texas, and so forth. And now it's starting to look, if you look across the polls, and there's a couple things I want to say about polls. I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again, especially in House districts. When you look at the polls, either there are no polls or the polls have sampling issues or they are New York Times Siena College polls. Now, let me tell you about the New York Times Siena College poll again, because both Republicans and Democrats are touting the New York Times Siena College polls, and I think it's very dangerous. First of all, what the Siena, the New York Times Siena poll is Siena College uses college. I assume they are volunteers. I'm not going to say that they are, but they're paid college students to conduct a telephone polling of registered voters. And there is so much confusion about polls. I'm going to tell you a little bit about polling now because I think it's really, really important to point out. As I said in another podcast, and I'm sorry if it's a repeat, but I don't think this stuff can be said enough because people say the polls say this and the polls say that. The polls don't say anything. The polls are the polls, and that's it. They are a snapshot in time, and they are very dependent on who does the interviews, very dependent on whether the interviews are done online through smartphone or on the landlines, very dependent on what they call voter screens, which are designed to assess the likelihood that the respondent will vote. So those are the first hoops that you got to jump through in order to fully understand what a political poll is. The other thing that's really, really important is political polls need to be randomly sampling both and stratified by demographic and geography. So in any given state, there are so many numbers of people who are 18 to 34, 25 to 34, and so forth. You've got to represent the population, and you've got to represent the geography. So in the state of Minnesota, obviously Hennepin, Ramsey counties are where the population centers are, and Rochester, and then when you go up north, Duluth. But districts like the 8th District or St. Louis County in Minnesota have always been really important. It's a massive county, and it's always been really important in terms of final results. Also, when it comes to voter screens, when it comes to how these polls are conducted, if you have a 500 sample size, now 500 to 600 people should be enough to survey a state of 1.2 million people with about somewhere between 93 and 96% standard deviation or reliability. So the actual poll results could be, you know, anywhere between 3 to 4 to 5 points one way or the other. And when you get into complex questions about whether or not someone's likely to vote, whether or not you're talking, it's a 4-point poll where they ask a question like, you know, on a scale of 1 to 5 or 1 to 10, when you get into small sample sizes, it becomes very difficult to make judgments from polls like that. So what do pollsters do? Usually what they'll do to deal with that is they will conduct several polls over a period of time, and they will ask the same questions so that those questions can be trended building to sample size each time. So at the end of 3 or 4 polls that are 500-person polls, you got 1,500 people. So those sub-questions and subgroups like demographics, 25 to 34 women or whatever, start to fill in. But they still have to be managed geographically. So you can't say in a statewide poll, for example, that, you know, soccer moms, quote-unquote, are going to do this or do that, because you don't know if all the 25 to 34 women that you talk to are quote unquote soccer moms. I mean, that's a bad example. It's not really a term that we're using today. But see, those are the kinds of questions that are important. So the Siena New York Times poll doesn't randomly sample calls made to respondents. They call registered voters. And as far as I can tell, the way that they get around the fact that the poll is not necessarily stratified by geography or population is they call large numbers of registered voters. So at the end of a period of time with the Siena New York Times poll, you know, you're looking at larger sample sizes. Now, larger sample sizes can obviate more carefully designed polls, I would imagine. I don't know that that's true, but I've seen it where larger and larger sample sizes sometimes can obviate mistakes that would show up in smaller sample size polls. I don't know that that's true. But the problem I have with the Siena poll is that they call registered voters and they hit pockets of voters. So one week you can have somebody up by 12, and the next week you can have somebody down by 12. There was one, there's one election, the 2nd District in Minneapolis, St. Paul, which is a quote-unquote purple district, which the Siena Times, New York Times poll said that the incumbent there was down by 12 points. Well, the incumbent won last time by 200 or 300 votes. It's a close district. There are pockets of Republicans in that district, and there are pockets of Democrats in that district, I would imagine. And I think I looked at that and I said, minus 12? No way. It's too close. There's no way it's that. If it is, then sayonara. But I doubt very seriously if it's that. Well, I think what happened was they hit a pocket of Democrat voters. So if you're a political person and you're watching this stuff very, very closely, you have to be very careful of the New York Times results. And you see it both with Republicans and with Democrats. So if you're a Democrat and you're looking at polls and you're seeing blue numbers and you're seeing plus 12 and plus 9 and it's the Siena poll, you might not want to take that at face value. Same with Republicans. So depending on the state, and I've got the polls here on my cell phone, but my smartphone, but depending on the polls, like, so if you look at the Senate polls, for example, in this thing. And of course, now they've changed it. Yeah, here it is. So the Senate polls, if you look at Texas, Cruz is up by 7 right now. Or let's look at Tennessee, where Marsha Blackburn has pulled away from Phil Bredesen. There have been several polls done. One of them, which was a New York Times Siena poll, where they have Blackburn up by 14. There was a Fox News poll that has Blackburn up by 5, and the average is that she's up by 5. I would say that that race is probably a little closer than up by 14, unless the New York Times Siena College poll has uncovered a way to measure these races that's much more accurate than what the other guys are doing. I shouldn't say accurate. I should say reliable. That's the kind of stuff that I'm looking at. Then you look and you see all these editorials where they say voters are going to punish the Democrats for the Kavanaugh thing, or the Republicans are running on bigotry, or the blue wave is going to collapse before it reaches shore, or the Democrat blue wave, which I never found any evidence of, is peaking too early. These are everywhere. And then these are picked up and people talk about them on talk shows, and they take the conclusions from some of these articles, which are written by partisans, and they run with those conclusions. So I want to talk about those a little bit. You've probably heard me talking about what happens if you are injured at work or play. Do you handle the insurance and workers' comp claims by yourself, or do you get somebody who really knows what they're doing? And that would be John D. Scott of Hoffman, Hamer & Associates. John's a great personal injury lawyer. I'm going to give you his number. You should just set it aside because you never know when you're going to need it. 612-963-4629. It's true. Any kind of an accident usually comes without warning, even when you're having fun. John told me a story today that I love it, and I hope I get the details right. So, you know, bonfires are big this time of the year, and people consume, you know, beverages around the bonfire, and a fight ensued at this bonfire. John's client was involved in this altercation. Somebody took a 2x4 and hit him in the face with a 2x4. Now, this is among friends. This is what happens. You never know when you're going to get injured, and John is trying to figure out how to help this guy get his medical bills paid for and address the issue, because what ends up happening as an accident, these things come without any warning, again, even when you're having fun. And John D. Scott can help you make sure you get the help that you need. Again, John D. Scott of Hoffman, Hamer & Associates. He is a great personal injury lawyer. Write the number down, 612-963-4629, because you never know when you're going to need it. Or you can click on that banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. 612-963-4629, 612-963-4629, or visit jdsinjurylaw.com. There's a contact page there, and you can explain what your little problem is. Believe me when I tell you, John is detailed, he is meticulous, and he can help you get the help that you need when you are injured, whether it's at work or having fun. So I'll tell you more about John going forward, but this is certainly a great thing to have a number available. John D. Scott, personal injury attorney at Hoffman, Hamer & Associates. Now, in the news these days, and we didn't talk too much about it, tariffs. And it's going to come up again after the election, and that has companies preparing to bring some of their manufacturing back to the U.S. If this is you, if you're considering American manufacturing, please remember Depot Star, American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing. Visit Depot Star, D-E-P-O-T, at DepotStar.com. So this podcast is a little dense if you are a casual political observer. If you're involved in politics, if you're a political freak, you know what I'm talking about. And you probably have little barbs of arguments coming as I speak, and that's okay. I would urge you to kind of put them out of your mind, at least for the 30 or 40 minutes for this podcast, because I think what we often do too much is we are too willing to debate in a conversation, or to make a point in a conversation, and we're just not listening. So what I'm giving you is really important stuff. First of all, again, I can't say that I support Republicans, and I can't say that I support Democrats. I have often talked about the failings of both parties. There are issues on all sides of the spectrum with both political parties and the policies that they are advocating. I think we're at a very critical period in our history. I don't know that we have reached that pivot point yet in history where the policies that each party is advocating are going to be revealed as confused at best. That's my bias. I think the government is too powerful. That's my bias. I don't find my biases to really be applicable to any current people. I'm not sure what my feelings are about how we are conducting politics, you know, in this country in terms of Twitter and in terms of rhetoric. I'm not sure what any of it means. I think too often people try to point to something and say, this is ruining this. This is the problem. This is the problem with this country. I think the timelines of history or the arcs of history are much longer. And I think that as a population, we can tolerate a lot of noise in the signal for a long time until it finally reaches the point where we can't tolerate it anymore. And then people start commenting and thinking and voting on it. Have we reached that point with Kavanaugh? Does that mean that that's going to kill off what would have been a blue wave? I will tell you again, when I looked at the polls, I found a lot of close races. I did not find an evidence in the polling information of quote-unquote blue waves. I found that there, in some cases, there are very good Democrat candidates running against incumbents. And I found in some cases where the Democrat candidates running against the incumbents were overhyped. I also find that there are a lot of Republican candidates, particularly in the House, that are just political animals, and I don't know what they think or believe. And that's really not my position to tell you. So making predictions about Kavanaugh, the Kavanaugh thing, you know, is going to push Republicans out to the polls. All of that stuff, that's entirely, if you are a Republican and you think that, you go right ahead and think that. If you think that women are going to go out and vote against Trump because they hate Trump and blah, 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 you go to right ahead and think that. We won't know until after the vote whether people voted on the economy, whether they voted on Kavanaugh, whether they voted on some combination of those three, or whether they were driven to the polls by a very high degree of negative advertising. Because as these races are getting tight, they are scrambling to try to get an advantage. That's why you saw Beto O'Rourke in the Cruz debates go negative on the senator in an effort to try to get an advantage. That is why you are seeing all this weird advertising. That's why you're seeing efforts, for example, in Minnesota. There's a lot of criticism of a recent Eric Paulson, who's the Republican incumbent in the 3rd District, ran an ad regarding volunteering in the state. You're seeing a lot of chaff about that. Somebody went through Karen Housley's Facebook page and found a bunch of silly posts that she made. And I guess it was at Huffington. And that's becoming an issue, and people are writing about that. It's because these are close races. So in our state, Tina Smith was appointed to the Senate. She's running for her first election. She's the incumbent because she was appointed when Al Franken vacated the Senate seat in Minnesota. And Housley is running against him. She's a state senator. And, you know, Tina Smith is supposedly up by 8 points. I would assume by looking at the controversy with Karen Housley's Facebook page, for example, and I don't need to give you the details because if you're not from Minnesota, you don't even care, that the race is probably a lot closer for the Democrats than we know, because if it wasn't, they wouldn't pay any attention. They wouldn't make any effort to try to publicize anything that Housley did. When they're ahead and they're killing you, they are not going to pay any attention to anything you do or say. When they're worried, that's when they attack. And so you're starting to see Democrats on the attack all over the place, either running attack ads or going on the attack rhetorically in an attempt to win earn media. And that suggests to me that what's happening is things are tightening up. Why are they tightening up? Well, you've got anywhere between 38% to 40% Democrats and anywhere between 38% to 40% Republicans, with people, quote unquote, in the middle who are, quote unquote, independents. Independents are people who there is no independent political party in the United States unless you want to count that as libertarians. Those people would identify as libertarians. Secondly, there's not that many libertarian candidates running, so there's really no Green Party, Constitution Party. Those are not independent. That's not an independent political party. So an independent political party, we don't have one. So the people who identify as independents are people who don't want to tell pollsters they're Republicans or Democrats, or they register. I don't even know if you can register as an independent in every state. So my sense about independents is they either, in the end, lean to the Republican side or lean to the Democrat side. Then so they're either Republicans or Democrats that just don't want to tell anybody what they're going to do at the end. And so when they say we're trying to get these swing voters, I guess that has some application when swing voters have an impact in an election. I personally think this election is going to turn on the number of people who go out to vote that are Republican versus Democrat. So how fired up are the voters? And no one can answer that question. People try. They've got all kinds of silly reasons for why. But in the end, you don't know what's going to happen on Election Day. You just don't. I'm reminded of the old stories, the old saws that if it's raining, more Democrats will vote. If it's sunny, more Republicans will vote. Those things don't hold anymore. And there, a lot of what I'm seeing written about the election are those kinds of truisms and those kinds of ideas about politics, which who knows if they're true. Somebody said to me today, well, what about early voting? Do you think that's going to make any difference? And I was like, I have no idea. I couldn't tell you if early voting is going to make any difference or not, and no one else can. So in conclusion, polls do not tell you what's going to happen. We live in a society now that is just obsessed with the idea that we have this ability. If we can get enough smart people in a room, or if we can use technology, we've got an ability that allows us to predict the future. We can say this is going to happen, and if it does happen, then this is going to happen. And we have turned political coverage into sports coverage, which goes on endlessly in detail about whether or not some running back is injured, or what the field is like in Cincinnati, or you know, somebody's batting average. And at least with sports, you play games every week and there's an outcome. We have been covering the midterms now for almost a year, and there is yet to be an outcome. There was a flurry of outcomes, you know, during the primaries, but those don't really mean anything. All they do is select candidates to actually run in the main elections. And people are on the edge of their seat if they're political freaks, and in some cases, people who shouldn't be. In other words, people who don't know a lot get sucked in because they're watching too much CNN or Fox News. They get sucked into the day-to-day stuff. I could sit here and do podcasts about stuff Trump has said every day. In fact, I resist the temptation to do that. I'm not even sure I want to do this one, except I know that these are things that are on the top of my mind, and that's why I'm doing this off the top of my head. I don't want to talk about whether or not Trump said the right thing with the Saudi journalist that was allegedly dismembered in the Saudi embassy. I don't even care. If there's an outcome there at some point that has something to do with policy, then it's worth talking about. There's three or four of those things every day. The latest in the present time frame is that Trump said, don't blame me if the Democrats win the House of Representatives. I mean, and we're all supposed to have a response to that. We're all supposed to talk about that. People, what do you want to know? It's just another missive or, you know, spurious omission or not, from somebody who has turned Twitter into a high art in terms of getting control and maintaining control of the so-called media battle space, or better known as the news cycle. I will say that I think most of the people in New York and Washington, D.C., so most of the people in political media, that's where they are for the most part. I think most of them have a certain point of view, let's just say that. And that certain point of view colors almost everything that they say. They expect a certain thing to happen. And I think that there is a possibility that we're headed towards an outcome that they will say could not have been predicted, because they refuse to believe that it's possible that more Republicans could come out to vote than Democrats in some of these key places, particularly in so-called pivot counties, which were Democrat not too long ago. In other words, a majority of Democrat voters in the 2008 and 2012 presidential elections, and then flipped in 2016 to vote for Trump. So, and those, there's several of those pivot counties in a lot of these key districts, whether it's Southern Illinois or Northern Minnesota. So they're all over the country. And if you want to know more, just look up pivot counties. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that I just have a sense and a feeling that I hesitate to call them mainstream media. I'm saying the political media has a certain perspective because they eat, drink, and sleep this every day. And they're either at the White House dealing with the president and his team all the time, or they're at the House covering Congress, or they are dealing with the aftermath of some policy on the border or something to that effect. And so almost all the intelligentsia and the elite media people who are paid to analyze, there's nothing to analyze, people. People are going to go vote. You are not going to be able to tell what they're going to vote for. It's going to be very hard to tell why they're voting, what they're voting for, whether it's because they saw a negative ad 3 weeks before and it changed their mind. These are all things about psychology and personal motivations that don't come clear until later. So real political scientists look at stuff after the fact and try to figure out what the motivations were based on the information that's available, based on psychology, based on interviews, based on one-to-one interviews. All those things come into play. I think it's highly irresponsible to expect a certain result from an election. And I don't think it can be said enough. And it's the basis of almost all the political podcasts I've done since 2016, when I went out and covered the campaigns and came to the conclusion that telling people what was going to happen was 90% of the problem. Polls cannot predict. And polls in particular. So I did 9 podcasts at the end of August about these House races. And I said at the time, most of these House races have no polls. There is no polling. It's all based on money raised and on the come kinds of analysis about who you think is the better candidate. In some of the cases, it was said, well, this Democrat candidate is fantastic and he's really going to, particularly in some of the California Valley elections that are still ongoing, or because of primary performance, people said, oh, this person's going to be really great, and they basically imploded. We are seeing potentially Phil Bredesen in Tennessee, who is a Senate candidate. Everyone said, oh, he's going to be great. He's really popular. He seems to be imploding. I'm not saying he is or he isn't. This is all based on the polling information. All the polls do is look, you, if you have enough of them, you can trend them into a probability. But Ted Cruz, even being up by 5 or 6, that's still within the margin of error. There's a lot of these New York Times Siena College polls. They're not standard political polls. They are calling registered voters. So I would say that the polling information on both sides is highly suspect. And, you know, you got to be careful of commentators saying, well, the polls say this, therefore. There's no linkage between what the polls say and even trended polls and what actually happens on election day, because it all depends on whose Get Out the Vote campaign is more successful, to be quite honest with you, especially in House races. And these guys can win by 200 or 300 votes. There's no electoral college to mess up a vote. It's very much a popular vote in the districts and in the statewide races. So we can see potential victories of 200 or 300 votes or within a recount margin. There might be recounts. There might be a lot of rancor. On the other hand, I would say that there's a good probability that you could see a red or a blue quote-unquote wave. In other words, if it's a red wave, then what you'll see is you'll see some pickups and you'll see many of the Republican seats as holds. If it's a blue quote-unquote wave, in order for it to be qualified for a wave, it would have to be historically a large number of seats changing hands. So it would have to be in the House something like 35 plus seats or 40 seats changing to Democrat, and in the Senate would have to be 4 or 5 seats to be quote unquote a wave. So if it's a Democrat win and they pick up some seats and they're able to get the required number of seats, they get 213 or whatever it is, then they will control the House. I think it's doubtful they'll control the Senate. There's going to be some Republican pickups. But again, I'm not making predictions. I just think based on what I see now, I would say that there might be some pickups. But in every one of these, you know, elections in the Senate, particularly the statewide races, you're seeing them tighten up and you're seeing the margins get tighter, 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 which means that the polls are less and less reliable. And So people should go out and vote, and then they should sit down and they should watch the results and be prepared for anything. And now, as far as what happens after, well, then we'll talk about what happens after when it happens. They're already saying, if the Democrats win the House, all these terrible things, it's going to make Trump's job a lot more difficult. As far as what he does and how he handles that, well, that's another story entirely, and I can't predict that. Beware the soothsayers. That's all I'll say. And beware of these people saying, the polls say this. I heard a pollster say it on NPR the other day. I heard a pollster say that, or somebody who was a political analyst, well, the poll said Hillary Clinton was going to win. And I'm going to say it again. They did not say that. All of the polls prior to the election of 2016 were very close for both Trump and Clinton. It's that simple. I think if you are looking for someone who is going to have a victory, it's not going to be unexpected because you're going to see polls that have them well in excess of 9, 10, 12 points. I think probably Joe Manchin is going to win in West Virginia. When it comes to Joe Donnelly in Indiana, when it comes to the Florida Senate race, when it comes to the Florida governor's race, the Georgia governor's race, Scott Walker, et cetera, those are too close to call, and it's hard to tell, especially in a place like Wisconsin where the voter turnout stuff is really, really, really important. You have to say, okay, we're going to have to wait and say before we say what's going to happen there. When you see wide advantages in polls early on or even late on, like where we are right now in the middle of October, well, then you can say, okay, it looks like this guy's in trouble. You know, I would say Walker's in trouble right now based on the polling. Doesn't mean he's going to lose. Same in Tennessee with Blackburn. But again, that huge advantage, as I pointed out, was a New York Times Siena poll. And if they hit a pocket of Republican voters to give her that huge advantage, that gives her an average of being ahead so-and-so-and-so a number of points, when in fact, she's ahead within the margin of error. So Phil Bredesen could still win that election. And people would say, the polls said she was going to win. No, it didn't. And they don't. And the same with Ted Cruz, and the same with all of these. There are a couple of elections where the people running, there is a clear several point advantage for one or the other. Those are probably polls that you could say reliably say so-and-so is going to win. And if so-and-so doesn't win, then you can say that poll, quote-unquote, was wrong. But when they're within 3 or 4 points, they're just predicting, they're just giving you a shot of what's in there. And these people in media consistently get it wrong. And they say things like, well, the polls say this. And the polls say, what this one is saying, they don't say that. Again, you're looking at a snapshot in time of a number of people who responded to a survey. You got to look at the sample. You got to look at the questions. And the best thing I can tell you to do is go to realclearpolitics.com, go to the click on the elections tab, and then go to House, Senate, governors, whatever you're interested in. And then when you get the table of the polls taken in that particular election, so if it's, California's, 5th district or something, there'll be the picture of the two candidates, and then you scroll down and you'll see 5 or 6 polls taken going back to March. And you can see all polls, and there's probably, depending on whether or not it's, for instance, with Duncan Hunter's district, there's probably been 7 or 8 polls taken. And then you can click on it, and you'll see all of them, and you can click on the poll data, and it will tell you how many people were called and everything else. If you really want to get into it, that's what you have to do, is look at the individual data and determine whether or not the results make sense. So that's what's going on. You have a lot of people that are being told this is what the polls say. They write it down in a story. They either copy it out of another story, and then some analyst somewhere says, well, the blue wave is dissipating. And if you're a Democrat, that's demoralizing. Guess what? If you're a Democrat and there have been indications that there's going to be a shift in the House, I would say that those indications are probably pretty reliable unless something changes. Did the Kavanaugh thing have an effect? It's hard to tell. I wouldn't say that it has or hasn't. It could have faded by now. Again, local issues, whether it's in northern Minnesota, it's mining that's going to be an issue with Pete Stauber and whoever the Democrat is up there. Same in some of these other places. All across the country, there are local issues that come into play as well. So if you're a Democrat and you're upset because people are saying there's no blue wave, they've just woken up to the fact that there's no evidence and never was evidence that there was a blue wave. There was a lot of hope among certain reporters that there would be a blue wave. There may still be a blue wave. I mentioned in one of the other podcasts that I missed the red wave in 2010 because I didn't believe it. And this is the same thing. I tend to be skeptical of these things because, you know, I'm just skeptical of predictors. Even about if it's about a tornado, I don't believe it. So I just scoffed at the idea that there was a red wave. But that issue was Obamacare. And they underestimated the number of Republicans that were going to go out and vote against Democrats because they didn't want Obamacare to pass, or they were angry that it did pass. This is a different environment that we're in now. We're in an environment where Trump is a big lightning rod, positive and negative. Kavanaugh is a big lightning rod, positive and negative. And we just have to wait and see whether that drives the votes. So I can't say, and the pollsters can't say, and the analysts can't say, because they don't know. You can't possibly know what all these people in the 3rd District in Minnesota are thinking. It's just there isn't enough information to know. There's the usual back and forth political stuff, but if I were to say to you, you know, Eric Paulson is the incumbent in the 3rd District, the polls have not been kind, it's looking like he's beleaguered, but he's been beleaguered before, and I can't possibly know what's going on in the 3rd District because there's not enough information. There's one or two polls, and that's it. So when somebody says, oh, you know, he's in trouble, he might be and he might not be, depending on what his get-out-the-vote effort is all about. And there are stories like that all across the country. So it irritates me when I hear people saying, this is what's going to happen. The blue wave is dissipating. You don't know that. The fact is that the evidence for a blue wave was never very strong. There were a lot of close races that Democrats looked better in than they look now. That's as much as you can say. Does that mean that they're going to lose? No, it does not. Even if they're 5 points down, it doesn't mean that they're going to lose. If you're a Republican and you don't like the blue wave story and you think that scares you, again, there's no indication that some of these Republican incumbents are going to lose. It's going to depend on what the people who are supporting those candidates do. So if you go out and you work for your candidates, or if you're going out to vote, that's what's going to matter when it comes to down to the election. And I don't want to say anymore because I'm rambling, but I the whole thing's been a ramble, and I think that's fine. It's just I'm doing this because I think these predictions, and it doesn't matter who makes the prediction, are extremely dangerous. I think they influence voters. I think they influence people. And it's reached a point of being absurd in this country that I don't watch it. I turn it off. And I don't – when I see a headline that says the blue wave is – I don't even read it because I know what they're going to say. And I'm not saying put your head in the sand. I'm just saying that after, you know, 25 years of experience doing this, I kind of know what to expect. And the desire to predict an outcome beforehand and thus make a name for yourself is completely out of control in this country. And somebody needs to say, look, this is what is going on. And I've done that with the 9 podcast series. I've continued to do it with just short little updates. I don't know if I'll be able to do another update before the election. Like I told you, I really don't want to talk about whatever Trump did today, because that's really what's driving the cycle, is that Trump says or does something, and then all of the analysts say, well, Frank, do you think that this election is going to stop Trump? Who cares? First of all, it's not, because it's not going to mean – I mean, I could do a whole podcast about the potential for impeachment and what it means and whether he's going to be stopped or anything else. It's going to affect his presidency. Of course, it will. But – we don't know if that's going to happen yet. But see, that's what happens. He says something crazy, and then they respond to it. And then that dissipates, and he says something else crazy. Why does he do that? He does it because he is controlling the story. They talk about what he's talking about invariably all the time, and I just don't want to do that. That's what goes on. I mean, this is the most ridiculous situation that I have seen in a long time. We aren't at war, unless you'd want to talk about Afghanistan, but we're not in a giant war where every time something happens in the war, it needs to be talked about. The economy, I wouldn't say is booming, but I would say that the economy is less of a concern. There are other concerns going forward, certainly deficits and inflation and what is essentially a Keynesian stimulus in the form of a tax cut. Those are issues, but I'm not going to talk about those things because nobody wants to hear that, because they want to hear the economy's going great guns, because that's what the president says. So those are all things that are going to come up, and no one's going to vote on those things either. But instead of us talking about those things, should we deficit spend to provide tax cuts? You know, is that the right thing to do? Should we use Keynesian economics if we're Republicans? Are the Republican status? These are all issues that we should be talking about, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about Kanye West, and we're talking about, Trump's interview with Leslie Stahl, and we're talking about the latest tweet on the Saudi thing, and we're talking about, whatever crazy thing he said last. He does that on purpose because he's able to control the cycle and he's in charge of what people are talking about. It's an absurd situation. And it's actually surreal. It's the worst I've ever seen it. Now, is it good? I don't know. It depends on who you support. If you like Trump, then it's great. If you are interested in talking about issues, you make a fool of yourself every day because you have to talk about things that you don't really care about. So what I care about is being able to say, here's the situation in all these House districts. You're welcome to listen to those podcasts and look those House districts up and see how much has changed, whether it's Texas or Florida or Georgia or Illinois or whatever. And then vote or don't vote on November 6, 2018. And then we'll be here on election night and we'll find out what actually happens. You guys have heard me talk about Johantgen Jewelers in the Crystal Shopping Center in Crystal. You can click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Just a reminder, they are having their 122nd anniversary right now, so things are on sale there. They have Citizen EcoDrive watches on sale for 25 to 30% off. All the diamond and gemstone jewelry is on sale with 30 to 40% off, and they can do great work if you need things restored, and check out that fabulous watch collection at Johantgen Jewelers, or you can click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Once again, thanks for listening to podcast 767, down to the wire photo finish for election 2018. Thanks for subscribing on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn. I really appreciate the people subscribing to the RSS feed right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Visit the website. I could really use the clicks, and that helps my analytics. Appreciate the likes and shares on Facebook and Twitter, and I love Instagram too, and appreciate your donations for mobile podcast command at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening.
Hey, some people are made of plastic. What you get.